Okay, thank you. We'd like to welcome Kate Bush to Night Flight. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. It's been 2 years since Dreaming, which a lot of critics called your masterpiece, and your current album, Hounds of Love. What have you been doing since Dreaming?
I've really been reorganizing my life. I work very intensely. When we're in the studio, we maybe take a year to make an album, and there's nothing else you can do once you're making an album. It just completely obsesses your life. So I wanted to take a break, get to see my friends, get back into training, that kind of thing. And we moved from the city to the country and built and equipped our own recording studio, which we then recorded all this album in.
Did you also... Hounds of Love is a fuller production, and then Dreaming. It's a natural evolution, I imagine. But were you reassessing your music at that point, too? Did you go through a period of reassessment?
I think you have to reassess your music after every album. Otherwise, you're just going to write the same thing that you've written on the last one. And for me, each album should be going somewhere different. Otherwise, there's not really much point in making a new album. So I think it's important to take a break to create a new energy for a new album, so it's just not the same thing.
On Hounds of Love, a lot of the songs are dance songs, and the single is a hit on the dance charts. Your first in America, was that premeditated? Did you aim for that?
No, I don't think you ever actually aim for any particular market as such. Well, I certainly don't when I'm writing a song. You just write a song because you're trying to say something, or you've got a nice musical idea, and you write the song for the song's sake, not really in order to conquer the world.
Uh-huh. Were you influenced by any dance hits, though? Any other dance songs?
No.
No?
I don't think so, no. I don't listen to very much contemporary music. I think this album is dealing with me being much more influenced and excited by rhythm, particularly consistent rhythm. And I think as soon as you've got consistency of rhythm, you're talking about things that are accessible to dancing to. And so as soon as it's danceable, people can relate to it.
Yes. Also, you still use a lot of traditional instruments. A didgeridoo? Tell me what a didgeridoo is, first of all.
Didgeridoo is an Australian Aboriginal instrument that's a long piece of wood hollowed out through the centre, and by blowing through this long tube with a circular breathing technique, you can create this... It's like a drone that has a kind of circular sound, because you can almost hear the air whipping around the inside of the tube as it comes out the end. It's incredible sound. It's very earthy, primeval almost.
And you mix a lot of other traditional instruments in with very unusual new music. I understand that your parents, your family, were... yeah?
Kate, give me a theoretical answer here.
A theoretical answer?
Well, how about the question? Traditional instruments. Your brothers played traditional, or was it your parents played traditional English and Irish music? And that's a tremendous influence in your music.
Yes. From a very early age, I was surrounded in the house by traditional music being played by my brothers. And I think, as you were saying, when you are very young, it gets in deeper somehow. And has probably been one of the strongest influences on my music.
You don't use your relatives on the album, do you?
I don't know. I think they definitely have involvement, yeah.
What part of England did you come from?
From Kent.
And where's Kent?
It's just outside London.
So the way you got into the business was through David Gilmour, correct?
Yes, he was really responsible for me being signed by the record company at such an early age. He put up the money for me to make three tracks to master three tracks in the studio, and through those master recordings, I got the recording contract.
How did you meet him? How did that come about?
I was about 15, 16, and we thought it would be really interesting to see if I could get some of my songs published. A friend of the family knew Dave Gilmour, who at that time was looking for talent to either be involved with or produce or encourage, and he came down to hear some of my songs as part of the scouting process. And I think he was intrigued enough to feel that it was worth mastering the demos and presenting them to record companies in that form.
Mm-hmm. So was the music of Pink Floyd an influence too?
I think it has become an influence because I like their music very much. But at that time, I was hardly aware of them. I knew of their name, but I knew very little of their music.
Well, I hate to keep harping on this, but I'd really like to find out where your influences are. I know that The Innocents is one of your favorite movies.
Yes, it is a favorite film of mine.
Right, and that's one of mine, actually. And I've heard that you have a lot of negative triggers in your imagination. That's a quote of yours, right?
I think quotes are very dangerous things. Because quite often, in an interview situation, you're saying things just to string words together half the time. It's not necessarily something that you mean. I think you just say something, you think, hang on, I didn't really mean that. So it's always a frustrating process where you're being re-quoted from things you were saying at other points in time.
But would you say that you have negative triggers? Let me take I don't want to put you on the firing line, but Mother Stands for Comfort. Mother Stands for Comfort?
Yes.
It sounds like it's inspired by tabloid headlines, in a way, or a tabloid story. Can you tell me where that song came from?
It's really about the power of maternal love, and that in the song, the son has done something criminal, and it's irrelevant in a way what he's done, because it's the mother wanting to harbour her son and keep him safe. That's her concern, to look after her child, rather than the morality of the situation. Her love is much more important to her than what's right or wrong.
Many of your songs also show that strong tie to family, which you mentioned. Are you still very close to your family?
Yes, we are a very close family.
Do they live in Kent?
Yes.
At this point? Yeah. With your last album, Dreaming, you used the Fairlight for the first time.
No.
No?
No, it was on Never Forever that we used the Fairlight.
Ah, sorry. How did you discover it?
We were working on the third album, and there was a guy basically exhibiting the Fairlight, bringing it round to people to show them. And he brought it in to the studio because they thought I'd be interested, and I was very.
So did you start tinkling around on it? And
Well, as soon as it was there, it was something I think I'd been looking for a long time. The ability to be able to sample any sound that you want and then play that. Is something that songwriters dream of, really. And it went straight on to nearly every track on the album.
Had you felt restricted before that? You play piano and you're self-taught, right?
Yes. No, I don't think you feel restricted. It just means there's a whole new world added to what you had before, rather than feeling restricted and then feeling free. I think there are so many things that you can use in the whole process of songwriting as it is. It's a whole world of things to choose from.
Also, you were one of the earliest rock performers or popular performers to incorporate dance into your performance. You studied with Lindsay Kemp, correct?
Yes.
Was that after he worked with Bowie, too?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Did you know about him working with Bowie?
No, I didn't find that out until I'd been training with Lindsay for a few weeks, and people were talking about Bowie and how he'd been a pupil of Lindsay.
So how did you start? How did you find Lindsay Kemp?
It was purely coincidence. I was taken to see a show, and it was his performance of Flowers, and I'd never really seen anything quite like it. They were using theatre and movement to express something quite fantastic without any words at all, and I felt that the combination of that with music could be a really interesting way of performing.
At what point in your career was that?
I was still at school, and it was a few months after that that I decided to leave school and to throw myself into the world of music, and dance seemed to be something that was such a parallel to it that I felt it was good for me, especially in terms of being a performer, something that I knew nothing about.
Mm-hmm. So it must seem sort of natural that Running Up the Hill is a dance hit, isn't it?
Yes, I think it's quite interesting because as a piece of music, it's very much a kind of rhythm that you could dance to in a contemporary way. And the video that we made for it is almost a classical piece of dance. So I think it's quite an interesting contradiction there.
Your videos are all very minimal, and I guess you want to keep them that way. Do you have a theory about video, about music videos?
Explain minimal.
Stark.
Stark.
Bare.
Bare.
Usually you're there by yourself, wearing
yes.
very little.
I disagree. I'd say that there were early videos where, at that time, I was very influenced by dance and theatre, and the vehicle really was to use dance because it wasn't being used at that time. It was an unusual way of presenting things. But I think a lot of them really are trying to tell stories, and I prefer to think of them almost as short pieces of film that are either doing something visually interesting or are telling the story of the song where that's possible.
Mm-hmm. As far as film is concerned, you also have expressed an interest in film. Do you see yourself getting into film?
Well, I think making promotional clips, especially if you are working in film, is just like making a very short movie. And for me, that's the way I think it works the best. That's when promotional videos work. I think there's a lot of videos that aren't very interesting around. And I have a very big fascination for films, and have had for a while. I think my influences visually have changed from being dance theatrically based to being much more cinematically influenced. And I would very much like to be involved in films, but I don't know how.
Well, I'm sure it's coming. As far as your videos, do you have artistic control over those?
Yes, I think it's quite similar to the recording process, where with each video I've become more involved. Initially I was involved in the choreography, and I've become more interested by the technical side of the whole process.
As far as the American and English audiences, you've had a number of hits in England, and this is your first American hit. What would you say the differences between American and English audiences?
I don't know. They're two completely different countries, two different cultures, and I think that influences people incredibly. I think we speak the same language, but perhaps apart from that, we have very different, different worlds.
Your vocals, when you first started your 78 album, Kick Inside, was it?
Yes.
Your vocals were a complete stretch, you know, up, down, very experimental. And you seem to have brought them, centered them more. Was that a natural evolution, or...?
Yes, I think it's my voice maturing as well as the songwriting changing. And at that period of the first album, I was very much experimenting with stretching my voice, playing with the songs as an exercise for my voice, to expand the range and see what worked and what didn't. I think in a way so much of what you do is experimenting, learning, and it's just, it goes down on tape during that process.
When you were experimenting and learning, was it hard to control the process, excuse me, when there were other people involved? Was it, being a woman in particular, was it difficult to organize the proceedings?
What proceedings?
Well, recording and getting a band together, getting musicians together and getting them to play with you and to show up on time. And
I don't think it matters if you're a man or a woman. Organizing people and events is something that involves different personalities, and some people aren't very good at being punctual and others are. I think I've been very lucky. I'm doing what I want to do, and I think I'm just very honoured to be a part of the music scene and to work with the people that I do.
On this album you credit, or you thank, Terry Gilliam.
Yes.
What was his contribution? He was on Monty Python, yes?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he's, in his own right, really understood as a director. I don't know if you know his work here, but he's had made some beautiful films, Time Bandits, and a film called Brazil, which I don't know if it's released here, but it's a great movie. And he wasn't actually involved in the album, but for the videos, I'm a great fan of his work, and I was very interested in working with him. And he really pointed to an area of people that I could work with that I didn't know, and who have been involved in the videos. My experience had been in video, not film, and they are very different people. It's a different way of working. And he introduced me to the film people that I made the last two videos with.
Aha. Interesting. there's another song on Hounds of Love called Big Sky, I think, where you use a couple of backup singers. Do you use backup singers on this album?
No, I didn't think on that track, no.
Let me see. I think so.
Do I?
Yeah.
Oh, who?
Well, who were the backup singers on this album?
On that particular on that particular track, I don't think there are any singers apart from my brother, who's singing with me in one of the verses. But as far as I can remember, it's just myself doing backing vocals in that track.
Your next single from this album, do you have plans for that?
I've no idea what the next single will be in this country. In England, we've already released the second single, which was Cloudbusting, and probably will release the third early next year. But obviously here, it's a different kind of time span, so I'm not sure. Maybe early next year would be the second single here.
Is there a chance that it's Cloudbusting here?
As yes, I don't think that's been decided.
Well, that is an amazing song. What? Can you explain where that song came from? Is it a tale of intrigue, or...?
Very much a song that would he... And one of the things that he did was build a machine that could make it rain. And together, they would go out and make it rain. There's a very magical sense in the book. For me, this sort of encapsulated the wonder of their relationship. And unfortunately, the book leads up to where his father is arrested because his beliefs are considered somewhat outrageous. And for the child, it's coping from then on without his father. And the song is really about that adult looking back at the magic of their relationship, how much they loved it, and how for him, now that his father's not there anymore, that every time it rains, he thinks of when they were out there together on the machine cloud busting. And it makes him happy. He finds a way of coping with it.
Okay. Cloud busting. Can you explain what that song is about and what inspired you to write it?
It's very much based on a book that I found about 10 years ago. It's called A Book of Dreams, written by Peter Reich, and it's about the relationship between himself as a child and his father, and what a special relationship it was. There's an incredible sense of innocence throughout the book because it's being written from a child's point of view, and you get a great sense of the magic of their relationship. His father was a very greatly respected psychoanalyst and had a great deal of theories on life energy, and also had a machine that could make it rain called a cloudbuster, and together they would go out and go cloudbusting. The song is really about the magic of that relationship, the adult looking back at what a good time they had. Unfortunately, the build-up in the book is where the father is arrested because his beliefs are considered somewhat outrageous. And from that point onwards, it's very difficult for the child to cope without his father. And the song is saying that now that his father's gone, instead of the moments when it rains being sad for him, they're a very happy thing. It makes him think of his father in a way the rain is the presence of his father with him.
Beautiful. You also mentioned that you don't listen to contemporary music.
I listen to some, but I don't listen to a lot of contemporary music, something that I think people expect of you, really.
What do you listen to?
I spend so much time listening to my own music. When we're working on an album, you're either listening to cassettes of arrangements or rough mixes or whatever. I tend to relax by watching things rather than listening to other people's music. But I love classical music, and ECM, I don't know if you know the music here, there's a label in Germany that deals with kind of jazz rock musicians, but it's almost like contemporary classical music. And I think I'm much more into instrumentals now than the sort of pop song format that you hear on the radio a lot of the time.
And theater and stage musicals?
I get no time to see those kind of things. I love going to the theater, and it's very rare for me to get the time to go. So when I can, I do, but it's just not enough, really.
And stage musicals?
I get no time to see those kind of things. I love going to the theatre, and it's very rare for me to get the time to go. So when I can, I do, but it's just not enough, really.
I'd like to go back to ancient history, the David Gilmour story, and talk about a young girl, 15 years old, coming from Kent and going into the music business in London. What sort of crowd did you fall into, and what was it like then? It was 1975?
I didn't fall into a crowd. I wasn't involved with the music business. It wasn't until I made my first album that I would say I was really involved in it.
Was it hard leaving home?
No, it wasn't connected like that. When I left school, I started dancing, and I was having to travel from my home up to London. So I moved out of home into a flat so I could be near where I was working, and stayed like that for, I suppose, nearly 2 years before I made my first album. So it wasn't like I was wrenched straight out of school into the music business. I think it would have been very different for me had it been like that.
Where you were working, where were you working? Are you talking
at an open dance school in London.
Regarding other influences, books. What kind of books do you read?
Again, I don't really read very much. I think people tend to presume that I do. I used to read a lot as a child. But I just don't find the time. I'm a very slow reader, and I'm always so involved in some aspect of the work that I'm doing that, again, it's something I just don't do enough.
But I suppose you pick up enough to just walking around the streets as far as what's going to intrigue you and spark your imagination.
Yes, I think people are basically what spark you.
I think so too. How about a regimen? When you're making a record, is there any sort of... You mentioned that you like to get back in shape. Do you work out? Is there a schedule that you keep to?
Dancing, I can't keep up. Whenever I'm making an album, I find I have to stop completely. And it's not until I've finished an album that I can start getting back into training. So it's a very on and off thing. And a schedule is almost impossible to create in a lifestyle where you're moving from one place to the other. I suppose the only time I get near to that is when I'm making an album, and then it's 5 days a week in the studio, quite a rigid routine.
How long did it take to make this last album?
To write and record, I'd say just under 18 months. And that was allowing technical and teething problems in our studio.
You mentioned touring earlier and the fact that you haven't done it since 79.
Yes.
Why not?
It was a lot of time and effort, a very big commitment, and it's getting to the point where nearly all my projects are very big commitments, and I think I haven't really wanted to do it since. I had to wait until the end of the last album to have enough new material to do a show. But I just don't think I feel prepared for that commitment.
Okay. The synthesized voice on Walking the Witch?
Waking.
Waking the Witch. Where did that synthesized voice come from?
By synthesized voice, do you mean the...
Is that the Fairlight?
The voice that is talking?
Yeah.
It's myself affected, going through a various assortment of machines.
So, this album was incredibly ambitious. Did this 18 months represent the longest period of time you've ever spent on an album?
No, I think it's about the same amount of time we spent on the last album.
Which was, as I mentioned earlier, critics said, your masterpiece.
Well, that's very nice of them to say so.
Roxy, you mentioned, although you don't listen to modern music, that you were heavily influenced by Roxy and Sgt. Pepper. Were there any other major influences like that?
I think they're influences because they're things that I liked. I think anything you really like, you aspire to, and they subconsciously, if not consciously, become influences. I think they're all digested things as well, because a lot of things you like, rather than copying, I think you sort of contemplate and then perhaps express what it sparks you off, but in your own way, rather than it being an imitation, which I think is something you definitely have to try and avoid. I think Roxy music were incredibly original. Brian Ferry is still being imitated and probably will be continued to be imitated. His voice, his singing style, and Roxy Music's approach to songs, I think, was quite revolutionary. I think originals stand out, and I think they were definitely originals, as was David Bowie. He was a great innovator, really, in many ways. I think there's definitely a few of them.
I'd like to get away from your work for a minute and ask you about Kate Bush as a person. What do you like to do for fun?
I think what I do for fun is what I do for my work now. I'm very lucky that what I used to do as a hobby is now my living. And I continually feel very lucky. It's the creative side of it that I enjoy.
Who do you consider a sex symbol? What male figure do you consider a sex symbol?
I don't know. I think people are attractive, and I think that's what appeals to you rather than a sex symbol. I automatically think of the physical being of people, and I think it's the energy that a person puts out as their presence that is what's truly attractive about them.
Are you aware of the energy that you put out yourself?
No, I don't think so, no.
Kate, would you say for me, hi, I'm Kate Bush, and watch for my video up next on Night Flight.
Watch for my video up next.
Hi, I'm Kate Bush. Watch for my video coming up next on Night Flight.
Okay. Are we ready?
Okay, Peter, whenever you're ready.
Hi, this is Kate Bush. Watch my video coming up next on Night Flight. Hi, I'm Kate Bush. Why don't you watch my video that's coming up next on Night Flight?
Okay. Hi, I'm Kate Bush. Watch from me on Radio 1990.
Hi, I'm Kate Bush. Why don't you watch out for me on Radio 1990?
I'm glad we have to do that again.
Glad.
Okay.
How can you watch out for someone on... It's a TV program called Radio.
Yes.
Right.
Radio.
Okay, Kate, ready? Hi, I'm Kate Bush, and why don't you watch out for me on Radio 1990?
Okay, can you do it once again without the why don't you just watch?
Watch.
A point.
Hi, I'm Kate Bush. Watch out for me on Radio 1990.
Okay, and now, hi, I'm Kate Bush. Watch for my video next on Radio 1990.
Hi, I'm Kate Bush. Watch out for my video next on Radio 1990.
Hello. Hi, I'm Kate Bush. Watch for my video coming up next on Heartlight City.
Hi, I'm Kate Bush. Watch out for my video coming up next on Heartline City.
Heartlight City.
Yes. Yeah. Hi, I'm Kate Bush. Why don't you watch out for my video coming up next on Heartlight City?
Perfect. And now the main question of the day. Hi, I'm Kate Bush, and what I like best about a man is, or what attracts me most about a man is...
I have to put it that way.
Oh, well, no, you can put it into your own words.
Right. And you want to say, hi, I'm Kate Bush.
Yeah.